welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Right Click. As always, Birdman here today, and we're going to jump right in because this is more of a news-oriented day. Because there's a couple of things that have been going on lately that have kind of crossed boundaries from the development side to the competition side. And, you know, one of which that we have to talk about is Ubisoft. And I do want to say this. I have talked over the last, couple years of doing this, I have talked about Ubisoft a lot. And I am fully aware that there's a certain level where it's like, okay, we're dwelling on this again. And I want to acknowledge that that is entirely fair. But I do feel like it's worth saying that there's a reason why I'm going to continue to talk about the ebbs and flows of Ubisoft. You know, I've talked about how they're kind of an 800-pound gorilla to some degree in the gaming industry and have been for quite some time. And frankly, that is the reason why I feel like it's so necessary to talk about them. Because regardless of what I agree with, disagree with, love, hate, whatever it may be that Ubisoft does, they are extremely impactful on the community and the development community as a whole. It is just the truth. I don't love that. There was a time that I did, and that proves my point. You know, things go up and they go down. There's peaks and valleys to everything. And in the court of public opinion, by God, there is peaks and there are valleys, and Ubisoft is the embodiment of that. But the problem is that Ubisoft is tied to just frankly so much in the industry. They are, you know, one of the biggest developers. They have been considered the first quadruple A developer, right? Like stuff like that. And that's where Skull and Bones came into play. We've talked about that. It was the pirate game that flopped. Now, it is necessary to talk about something that is such a pillar, be it good or bad, in the community, because here's the reality. Ubisoft is not doing well. We know this. And the recent reports, one of which we're going to talk about, kind of emphasizes that. They aren't doing well. And unfortunately, it leads to a lot of news. Now, granted, it's a bit redundant to some degree, but there are layers to the onion that we're going to peel back. Perfect example is this just recently came out. So Ubisoft has reportedly scrapped a sequel to Star Wars Outlaws. Excuse me. Now, the big issue with this is that Star Wars Outlaws is one of those games that could have been. And I think that's just about the best way to describe it. I actually put a pretty fair amount of hours into Star Wars Outlaws, because here's the thing. Even bad Star Wars content I ingest because I love Star Wars. I've talked about this on here before. Star Wars is still my favorite IP. And as much as Disney wants to ruin it, I still love the IP. Now, it's worth noting that this game was really poorly received initially because of the normal controversy of why did, and forgive me here, I'm not just trying to bash this person, this is not what I'm getting at, but a lot of the controversy was, why are they just doing a generic woman as the main character? And I've always argued this. I had the same argument with Rey. Is that what her name is? Yeah. Rey ended up being Skywalker, whatever her name was in the movies. Anyways, in 7, 8, and 9, I am one of those people that I've never had a problem with a woman being the lead as long as it made sense. A perfect example is Outlaws. Okay, fine. If you want to make the argument that she's not an attractive woman, listen, that's subjective, but also it's kind of stupid. My thought process with this game was it was advertised early on as she is a basically a female Han Solo. And to me, I thought that was really, really cool. I really did. I was actually very excited for that. I was like, man, it's really cool because we had Leia in the movies. But here's the problem. In practice, the character was boring as hell. I'm sorry. That character was horrifically written. And she was horrifically written into the rest of the story, and the story was horrifically written around her. It was awful. It just, like, objectively, it just wasn't a well-written story. Now, I actually really liked the map. I'm not going to lie. I had a lot of fun just exploring. Now, the game is still, to this day, horrifically optimized. I mean, like, bash your head into a wall kind of optimized. And I played this on a pretty beefy PC, an Xbox Series X, and a Series S. Oh, it's not great. Like, the gameplay itself was rough. Or the optimization, rather. And then you had the cherry on top, the gameplay itself, between combat mechanics and stealth mechanics, was pretty, I mean, truly abysmal. I mean, realistically, we were talking like early 2010s level of complexity. It just wasn't a good game. That's the reality. It was a very superficial game. It didn't really go beneath the surface. And that was the big problem. Now, I still stand by it. I loved the map personally. Again, personal thing, but I love the map. And Kay, I think is her name, the main character's name. She had moments that I actually didn't, I was okay with. It didn't bother me. But she was just, she was not a very inspired character. Well, here, you know, they put it out on Game Pass for a little bit, and then, so you could play for free, and that's how I did it, frankly. But the thing that bugs me more than anything is that this game had potential, and it was wasted potential, and they could have taken the bones of this and built something truly great, I think. But it's Ubisoft, and Ubisoft is now scrapping that sequel that was supposed to come and you know, supposed to fix the issues that the first one brought. That's never going to happen now. Now, unless they do something and drastically overhaul this, which is unlikely because this is now a beast to C-tier game for Ubisoft's development cycle, it doesn't really make sense to, especially when the only thing really keeping Ubisoft afloat right now is things like Rainbow Six Siege, and that's because of microtransactions. And funnily enough, that leads into this next thing. Well, Ubisoft is reportedly suffering mixed results as Assassin's Creed Shadow hits 5 million players, while Rainbow Six Siege X struggles. And I'm going to read this article because there's a lot to point out here that I think is very, very valuable to dissect. And more so than just Ubisoft specifically. This is very telling of the industry as a whole, so bear with me. Ubisoft has announced, quote-unquote, lower than expected results for its latest financial quarter and blamed the newly relaunched Rainbow Six Siege X. For the record, Rainbow Six Siege X is a rework of Rainbow Six Siege. It's a Tom Clancy's game. I've talked about it before. It's very popular in esports. I competed in it for fun, casually, back in the day. And I've always liked the game, and I actually came back to it when X launched because I just wanted to see what it was about. And to make a long story short, this game has been out for a long, long time, and it's a very competitive based game. Like, its entire existence is built around a competitive, esports basis. And I, at its face, I love that. Now, they relaunched this because it was out long enough there. It was an overhaul. It was time to redo the graphics engine, redo little things, right? You had all the original characters. They added some new stuff. They added some new gameplays. Okay, great. And that's fine. But it wasn't really enough to reinvigorate a crowd that used to love it. Okay, carrying on. Assassin's Creed Shadows, meanwhile, has continued to perform, quote-unquote, in line with expectations and recently passed 5 million unique players. Ubisoft has, to date, not provided an exact sales figure for the game, which is also part of its Ubisoft Plus subscription service. In a statement, Ubisoft boss Yves Guillemot described the quarter as featuring, quote-unquote, mixed results. Now, again, this is very, very important. Ubisoft has to date not provided an exact sales figure for the game, which is also offered as part of the Ubisoft Plus subscription service. Basically, what they're saying is that we don't know what the sales metrics are for this game. They're using unique players as justification for, look at how good we're doing. And that is a very artificial way to discuss a game's success, because especially when you're Ubisoft or a company this big, your lifeblood is how many sales you have made. Because nowadays, there's more than just, I go to GameStop, buy a game, come home, pop it in, and play it. It doesn't work like that anymore. There's a multitude of ways to play a multitude of games. I can play multiple Assassin's Creeds on multiple different products, be it Xbox, PC. You can play it on your phone now. And I can do that through, I can buy it on the phone, I can buy it on the Xbox, or I can buy it on the PC. Or I can use this subscription service that I have already, and it's included in that subscription service, so I can play it with no added cost on that subscription service. Or I can, you see what I'm saying? There's a lot of those types of options now. Well, why not tell us what the sales numbers were? Well, that's because realistically, like a lot of people went and purchased 1 month for like $10. Of Ubisoft Plus, and I played Assassin's Creed Shadows. I hated it. That's neither here nor there. That is not an accurate representation to how well the game is performing. That is a different type of metric. That does not bolster shareholder value. That's the truth. Now, carrying on, this article goes, so what went wrong? Ubisoft has pinned the blame on quote-unquote temporary but significant disruptions in player spending within Rainbow Six Siege X, its newly relaunched shooter that it describes as having faced technical pricing issues. I'll say. Launched on June 10th, Rainbow Six Siege X, that is awful. That is a terrible name, by the way. I'm just going to go with Rainbow Six from here. Saw Ubisoft's veteran team shooter essentially go free-to-play with access to various modes and operators unlockable without the need for a premium edition. Separate to this, Ubisoft said it has suffered from a, quote, pricing exploit with prepaid currency cards that temporarily inflated virtual currency wallets, something that has now been fixed. Today's new player figure for Assassin's Creed Shadows, meanwhile, sees the game continue to do what Ubisoft needs it to do. As players wait for the Claws of Owaji, which is the game's first expansion, due at some point this fall. Guillemot said, the first quarter delivered mixed results. On the positive side, Assassin's Creed Shadows delivered on expectations with now more than 5 million unique players since its launch, and Rainbow Six Siege received highly positive player feedback thanks to its renewed gameplay and enhanced features that drove significant player engagement growth. However, player spending in Rainbow Six faced temporary but significant disruptions due to technical pricing issues, which now have been identified and addressed. Despite this one-off setback, the growth potential of the game is solid, is strong with solid traction on activity and in-game spending. Okay. Lot of deflection here, and that's really the point. These big AAA, especially Ubisoft, because they are nothing more than a corporation, they are nothing more than a big corpo at this point, and that's just the truth of the matter. They have done a lot for this industry, and I will never doubt them, or I will never fault them for the good that they have done. I will never argue them for the good that they have done, because they have done good. And honestly, Assassin's Creed is one of the most impactful IPs in gaming history. That's just truth. That's not something subjective. That's just the truth. And they have created more than just Assassin's Creed. Okay, now, I grant them that, and, you know, personally, they have done a great deal for esports, which is very near and dear to my heart, which we're going to talk about here. But it seems like for these high-level developers, competitions, there is this consistent level of disconnect between the development and production and the player base. Here's a perfect example. I have talked previously about the EWC, the Esports World Cup, and I love watching the Esports World Cup when it comes up because I watch games that I normally wouldn't watch because I just love watching esports. I do. I love it. I think it's great. Now, I also think it's a great addition to the industry as a whole, and I think it helps foster a lot of good in the industry as a whole. Now, the problem is when you have Ubisoft-minded individuals running the show. Here is an example for you. Today marked the start of the Call of Duty side, the four-day Call of Duty tournament stretch of EWC. Goes from the 24th to, what, the 27th, right? 5, 6, 7? Yeah. This stretch is worth $1.8 million. It's the same prize pool as Call of Duty Champs, the pinnacle, the Super Bowl of Call of Duty. Now, it is one of the biggest prize pools in EWC. And, I mean, it's up there. There's some that are only 500,000, that are some that are only a million only, right? But this is a, regardless of comparison, that is a lot of money on the line. And these are the same competitors that have been competing through this entire season. Now they're just doing it for this tournament under a different branch, a different organization, i.e. the EWC. And the EWC, near as I can tell, for the majority, if not all of these other games, have let these other games be who they are. So Apex Legends operated in the same way as they do during their normal ALGS season, which is the Apex Legends something series. It's the pro league for Apex Legends. Same with League of Legends. Same with Valorant, right? The game fundamentally operated and as it does during its regular pro series throughout the year. Well, for some godforsaken reason, that changed. This is just one example I have. So this was announced this morning. If you see the tag here, July 24th, so today, time of recording, at 6:30 a.m. Now, mind you, this is important. This is over in Saudi Arabia, so the time difference is crazy. The first matches of the day today started at 7 a.m. Central. Keep in mind, first match of the day in normal rotations is typically 2 or 3 p.m. Okay, time difference, fine, not a big deal. I'm already up, doesn't really matter to me, gonna watch it. Same as I would if it was in the afternoon. But here's the thing. I show this, and you don't have to know anything about Call of Duty or what these maps and modes are, but it says Protocol Hardpoint will be played instead of Rewind Hardpoint for the Esports World Cup, apparently. Now, again, to many that may not matter, but here's what matters. This follow-up made, 9 minutes later. Players were not made aware of this until today. Mind you, this was tweeted at 6:36 a.m., first match starting at 7 on the dot. So why are we operating differently than we have throughout the season? This is not just a Call of Duty thing. Why are we, as a pinnacle of esports, as us, as a AAA, as this, whatever, why are we making the decision to inherently change this esport half an hour before? Well, it's not just this. So this is a map and mode. So they've changed the hard point, which is the game mode, always map 1 and always map 4. And it's a 5-map series. They changed that the actual map being played from Rewind. Name of the map is Rewind, which has been played for a while now. And they changed it to Protocol, which has not been played for a while now. Why? That's different. Not only that, another thing, they're playing on a different version, like a different software version of the game than has been played for the entire season in the CDL, or the Call of Duty League, the professional league of Call of Duty. Why are we changing that? That doesn't make sense. Well, they pushed back. They pushed back heavily because then, 2 minutes, you can see down here, 2 minutes before matches went live, it's back. Why are these people making these decisions? And here's the real cherry on top. They have decided, for whatever reason, each team has a coach, right? Even throughout the regular season, each team has 1 to 2 coaches. And typically what you'll see is a respawn game mode coach and an S&D coach. And what that means is there's 3 game modes played on a rotation throughout a 5-map series in Call of Duty. And that rotation is Hardpoint, Search and Destroy, Control, Hardpoint, Search and Destroy. You'll always hear a Call of Duty player, a true Call of Duty player, will always tell you, Search and Destroy wins championships. And it's true. You don't have to know anything about what I'm talking about as far as what the map or mode does, none of that. But for reference, you'll have coaches, and they have their own specialties, because Search and Destroy plays entirely different than Hardpoint, which is entirely different than Control, so you have coaches to adapt to each of those to help point out to the team, hey, here's the mistakes you're making in this situation. Okay, understanding that, the coaches are never out there. They might come out in between maps, but when the game is being played, the coaches aren't out there. The players can't hear anybody other than the players playing. So that means it's a 4v4. And if me and my three other teammates are playing, the only thing I hear in my headphones is the game audio and my three other teammates. That's it. And for whatever reason, the Esports World Cup put in a rule forcing coaches to be out on stage, standing behind the players and can communicate actively while they are playing. Nonsense. Because, and you may think, well, who cares? It's just another, isn't communication good? Yeah, absolutely. But here's the reality. For this esport in particular, your communication is as important as your gameplay. Because if you can't accurately communicate with your team, then you will fail. Part of the skill gap of Call of Duty is the communication. It's more than just, can I aim and shoot straight, and do I know when to do what? It's more than that. It's also communication. It's extremely important. And the EWC is trying to strong arm this particular esport into being something that it isn't. And that is pathetic. There's no reason for it. And it is causing a whole wave of headaches, because the reality is we're playing the same game, but now we're playing it differently. And you can make the point, well, you need to adapt. And okay, fair enough. But that's what Call of Duty is inherently built around. Every year it's a different game, and throughout the game they add a couple of, you know, maps into the rotation, guns into the rotation. Things do adapt as the season goes on from start to finish. That is the point of how the Call of Duty esport works, and that's why it's on a yearly rotation. But the format itself doesn't change. It doesn't need to change. Why? Because this works. This is not only what makes it work, but this is true to the identity of Call of Duty. And mind you, I come from a time in competitive Call of Duty where there were coaches on stage talking actively. And here's what it really ended up being. People realized that it was a complete sham of an idea, because it doesn't make sense, because it's that person's not playing. And it's not like Halo, where you have a timer that needs to be set for power weapons and for certain things. That doesn't exist in this. So those coaches were nothing but trash talkers. They would turn and scream at the other team while the four would play, and that was it. And then when they just got rid of it altogether, because it actively degraded the skill base of the game. You couldn't be better if somebody was doing part of the work for you. So this is my big problem with the way EWC is being ran, because it's a lot of money on the line. It's as much as champs is, and you are taking something where you have to commute from US to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. It's a 20-hour, potentially more, commute there. And you're there for 4 days to try to win nearly $2 million and a very prestigious trophy and award. And you actively change the game 30 minutes before the matches start. That is nonsense. That's not how any of this should work. Full stop. That's not controversial. Will this improve? I don't know. As of right now, they are still forcing coaches to be out there, and a lot of them are just staying quiet. But there's some that aren't. And you know what? That's the rules. So, okay. It is what it is. But the saddest part, the real cherry on top of all of this, is the game itself still does not function properly. They put them on a new software version and the game still doesn't work properly. The stream overlay still doesn't work properly. They're having constant crashes. The game doesn't work properly. Nothing works. Wait for it. Properly. So, if it's already that bad, why are we rewriting the rulebook? half an hour before players play their matches. I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. But it is interesting to me when I read stuff like this and I see this kind of news where I go, wow, the gaming industry is really taking it from both sides. The development, the competition, the player base is stuck in this ping pong back and forth. And I'm really hoping that when the dam breaks, things will clear and we can move forward, because I think there's a lot of sludge in the lines of the gaming industry. And I hope to see a change in that. But I'm going to leave it at that. Thank you all for watching. As always, Birdman here. Go check us out on RightsideMedia.org. Shoot us a message. Shoot us a comment. We'd love to talk to you. But thank you for watching. And as always, I will see you next week. And I hope you have a wonderful day.